It's the Sound Kitchen.
Mmm, yummy.
It's the Sound Kitchen.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
You're listening to the Sound Kitchen.
Yummy.
And Susan Owensby's cooking.
Bienvenue and welcome to the Sound Kitchen, where you never know what you'll be served. I'm Susan Owensby. It's Saturday, the 8th of March, the 74th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 291 days left until the end of the year. Here's a letter from the Sound Kitchen mailbag from faithful listener and correspondent Bidhan Chandra Sanyal from West Bengal, India. It's an explainer of Holi, also known as the Festival of Spring, Love, and Colors. The wonderful Indian festival that celebrates, as Bidhan wrote, the eternal and divine love of Radha and Krishna. Holika Dahan, to use the correct title for the two-day festival, celebrates the victory of good over evil forces. It's a festival of colors. Celebrants throw powdered colors on each other, and it sure seems to me as if it's all great fun. Holi also marks the end of winter, celebrates good spring harvests, and the fertile land. Bidhan wrote about color. This world of ours is wrapped in colors. Color plays an important role in many aspects of our lives. Through color, we can influence our mood, behavior, and mental health. The painter Pablo Picasso said, "Color changes human emotions." Through his statement, the effect of color on human life is obvious. Colorful greetings to everyone on the swing of spring and the festival of Holi. With love, Bidhan. Thank you, Bidhan, and I hope everyone had a wonderful Holi.
Hello, I am Devakamal Hazarika from India. You are listening to the Sound Kitchen, and Susan Owensby is cooking. It's yummy.
The Sound Kitchen team is complete. Erwan Rome is at his mixing board behind the glass window in front of us. And our co-chef Paul Myers, also known as Baby Brother, is right here next to me. Say hello, Baby Brother.
Hello, Big Sister.
Hey, you know the other day we were talking about AI, admitting we knew nothing about it and not really interested in learning about it either. Well, okay, my husband Xavier gave me a quick little course on it and a demonstration, which pretty much creeped me out in a big way. He asked ChatGPT to write a 5-minute radio show by Susan Owensby on Mozart. And in a matter of seconds, there it was, pretty much perfect with musical suggestions, everything. No need for me to think, research, or use my years of experience. It's awful. I asked my daughter Mathilde, she's 22, if she thought AI would make people stupid, and her young person, modern day, I love tech response, a resounding yes, which was heartening.
Okay. Well, it is the future, and she is part of that future.
She thinks it's... I guess there's some way you can use it to help you. But anyway, in her school, she has to do lots of team projects. And several of her teammates will use ChatGPT instead of really writing and researching something. And she told me that the schools have software now that can detect the use of AI because they'd all get flunked. For that kind of stuff. Anyway, which brings me to a new Sound Kitchen rule. Don't you dare use it.
Well, I've asked AI to help me with my sense of humor.
It surely didn't. Yeah, you don't need any help. You absolutely.
It didn't come back with that answer.
By the way, my husband Xavier, when I told him your response about International Women's Day, that it was hard on your marriage because you had too many women in the house. Boy, did he love that one. Anyway, back to this new Sound Kitchen rule. No AI, huh? I know that some of you have written little essays for me, and I don't need software to figure it out. Your answers, everyone, are about you, not about how well you can use technology. And if your English is not quite up to par, it's okay. I help, as I think you've noticed. But if you're having a hard time truly expressing yourself in English, and I understand because I have the same problem in French, put it through a translating app, and I'll correct it after the English. So listeners, answer questions and write letters that reflect who you are and what you think or believe. From here on out, I'm going to disqualify any AI-written essays and answers. Let's keep it human. Do you think I'm being too tough, baby brother? Too old-fashioned?
Old school. It's a hard school, but it's the old school.
Yeah.
You've got to put down a limit and the line. And yeah. If it's about people, they write who they are and what they are. And I know everyone wants to sort of project the best version of themselves, but the best version is the true version.
Okay, good. I'm validated. So off we go. Still to come, the quiz, your personal answers to the bonus question on the Listener's Corner with Paul, and a tasty musical dessert from Erwan on Music from Erwan. So don't touch that dial.
Are you ready? I do hope so.
And so do I, cuz it's time for the quiz. On the 15th of February, I asked you a question about Paul's article, Namibian independence leader Sam Nujoma dies, aged 95. Sam Nujoma was Namibia's first democratically elected president. He led Namibia's fight for independence from South Africa. You were to send in the answer to this question. Namibians have just elected a new president who will be inaugurated on the 21st of this month. What is the name of their president-elect? Paul, what's the answer?
Namibia's president-elect is Dr. Endimopiela Nathembo Nandi Ndaitwa. Born in 1952, Dr. Nandi Ndaitwa will be Namibia's fifth president and the first woman to hold the position. Speaking of Sam Nujoma, she, as I wrote in the article, paid tribute to Nujoma's visionary leadership, as well as his dedication to liberation and nation building. It laid the foundation for our free, united nation, she added. Let us honour his legacy by upholding resilience, solidarity, and selfless service. In addition to the quiz question, there was the bonus question. Describe a cultural monument or a nature site in your country that is not known to the world at large. The question was suggested by Hans Werner Lolliker from Hedehusene in Denmark. You'll hear the answers later in the Listener's Corner, so please do stay with us.
The winners of this week's quiz are RFI English listener Debashis Gop from the Dakshin Dinajpur district in West Bengal, India. Debashis is also this week's bonus question winner. This is what he would like visitors to see. The small stream flowing beside my village. It's wonderful. The crops are revived by its water. The stream flows into the river Tangan. Congratulations, Debashis, on your double win. Also on the list of lucky winners this week are Rashid Naz, the chairman of the Naz Radio France Listeners Club in Faisalabad, Pakistan. RFI Listeners Club member Father Stephen Wara, who lives in the Cistercian Abbey in Bamenda, Cameroon. And last but not least, two RFI English listeners from Bangladesh, Nargis Akhtar from Dhaka, and Sakila Musarat from Chapan Awabganj. Congratulations to this week's winners, and thanks to each and every one of you who wrote in. War, defense, arms, it's a lot of what we're reading about these days, isn't it? This past Tuesday, French President Emmanuel Macron hosted a meeting in Paris with military chiefs from 30 European and NATO countries, including the United Kingdom and Turkey, to discuss security guarantees for Ukraine should a peace agreement with Russia emerge. The meeting was held in tight coordination with NATO military command. This comes as U.S. President Donald Trump announced a halt to military aid and intelligence sharing with Ukraine, which he has since reinstated. But his initial declaration and continuous policy changes have forced European nations to reassess their strategy, boost their defenses, and break free from dependence on the United States. On Wednesday, defense ministers from Europe's five main military powers met for talks on the, quote, necessary rearmament of Europe, unquote, and military support to Ukraine, according to one of the French defense minister's aides. You read all about it in our article. Macron hosts European military chiefs to discuss Ukraine security guarantees. I want you to reread it and send in the answer to this question. Which five countries are Europe's main military powers? Again, reread our article. Macron hosts European military chiefs to discuss Ukraine's security guarantees and send in the answer to this question. Which five countries are Europe's main military powers? You'll find our article on the Sound Kitchen page on our website, rfienglish.com, as well as on the Sound Kitchen and the RFI English Listeners Forum Facebook pages. Paul, what's this week's bonus question?
It is, which is more important, talent or hard work?
And you don't get to answer both. Which would you say, baby brother?
You're really laying down the law today.
It's a really hard line.
I'm going to go with the tennis players I've spoken to over the years, such as Mr. Federer and Rafael Nadal, who say talent allied with hard work. Because they say we're all talented, but the ones who work harder are the ones who get the success. And it's that simple, because they can all hit a ball very hard down the line, but it's doing it time and time again. And that takes hard work. I'm saying both, but I'd naturally go for hard work. But from the sports people I've spoken to, and footballers, tennis players, cricketers, and rugby players, they all say both. Mm-hmm. And you won't deflect them from that line. It's hard work allied to talent.
So, it is hard to not say both, but I would put talent first.
First, okay.
And I don't know, I only know about the arts.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if it's just hard work for business, for technology, for things like that. But in the arts, or in a teacher, for example, if you're not a talented teacher, I mean, it's a special gift.
It's a gift.
And everyone has their own gift. The happiness in life is finding what your gift is.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, I'd stick with talent.
Okay.
So what about you? Which do you think is more important, talent or hard work? Remember, we're always happy to hear your ideas for bonus questions, so please send them in. You have until the 7th of April to get your answers to the quiz and the bonus question in. Be sure to tune in on the 12th of April to hear if your answer wins a prize. As always, be sure you include your postal address with your postal code. And don't forget to let me know if you are a Miss, a Ms., a Mrs., or a Mr. I don't want to get it wrong.
Send your quiz answers to english.service@rfi.fr. That's english.service@rfi.fr. Always include your postal mailing address, and if you have one, your RFI club membership number.
Hello, I'm Ras Franzman Kongogo, RFI club member from Kemogemba, Tarime Mara, Tanzania. My greetings to all of my fellow listeners in East Africa, India, and all over the world. My message is make big babo, but not rabo.
And now more from and about you. It's time for the Listener's Corner. Take it away, baby brother.
The question you answered this week, suggested by Hans Werner Lolicke from Hedehusene in Denmark, was, describe a cultural monument or a nature site in your country that is not known to the world at large. So let's start with Radhakrishna Pillai, who wrote, the cave temple Kottukkal in Kollam is not known to the world at large, a rare entity among the temple architecture of Kerala. Cave temples are few and arouse great curiosity. The one at Itiva at Chade Amangalam in Kollam district is one such temple, virtually carved out from a gigantic piece of rock lying in the middle of a paddy field. From a distance, this architectural wonder gives the impression of a sleeping elephant. There are two caves of unequal size, both facing the east, with the sculpture of the main deity Ganapathi in between. The smaller cave has an idol of Hanuman, and the larger one has a monolithic Nandi, a bull, in it. Lord Shiva is also a deity in the temple in the form of an abstract Shiva Ling. Historians date the temple to the 7th century AD when Nadila Parantaka Nedum Chadayan, who ruled Chadayamangalam nearby, built the rock-cut temple. The Kottukkal cave was declared to be a protected cultural monument by the Kerala state government in 1966. Still in India, Dipita Chakrabarty wrote, the rock garden of Chandigarh city in North India is an iconic cultural site. This 40-acre complex of interlinked courtyards and artificial waterfalls is filled with hundreds of concrete sculptures of dancers, musicians, and animals. It's a testament of human vision and ingenuity that is often missed by tourists, as it is lesser known to the outside world than the Taj Mahal or Qutb Minar. The rock garden is the brainchild of a government official, Nek Chand, who in 1957, in his spare time, recycled industrial and household discarded material to create a cultural wonder garden of magical inhabitants. John Yemi Sande Touré, who hails from Freetown in Sierra Leone, wrote, when you talk about Freetown and my area, Kleintown, there are many places or things the world has forgotten. In Kleintown, there is one of the oldest cemeteries in the country. There is the oldest university in sub-Saharan Africa, the Furay Bay College, University of Sierra Leone, built in 1827, and the Queen Elizabeth Harbour, known as the third largest natural harbour in the world.
John Yemi, I'm sorry to say this, but the Queen Elizabeth Cay is a man-made port, or cay, not a harbour. However, where you are right is that the Queen Elizabeth Cay was built on the river estuary, which carved out the largest natural harbor on the African continent. At any rate, I'd like to see it.
And after those precisions, Salim Akhtar Chadar says in Pakistan, the areas he loves and already seen are Sawat, Naran Kagan, and Muri. Malik Nadir Abbas Kokar wrote, the ruins of Harappa in eastern Pakistan are reminiscent of the almost forgotten Indus Valley civilization. Walking through these ruins immerses you in the Bronze Age Indus culture, also known as the Indus civilization or Harappan culture, which was one of the earliest urban civilizations in the world. It existed between around 2800 and 1800 BC along the Indus in the northwest of the Indian subcontinent. Few tourists come to this area, so the huge history behind these ruins seems to be little known. Helmut Matt wrote, there are many monuments in Germany too. The one I want to talk about today consists of many small parts. I'm talking about the Stolperstein, or stumbling blocks. A stumbling block is a 10-centimeter cube made of stone that carries a brass plate with the name and life data of the victims of Nazi persecution or extermination. The Stumbling Block Project, launched in 1992 by the German artist Gunter Demnig, is intended to commemorate the last place where people lived before they fell victim to the Nazi dictatorship. Most of the stumbling blocks commemorate Jewish victims of the Holocaust, but the names of Sinti and Roma, Poles, homosexuals, physically or mentally disabled people, Jehovah's Witnesses, and other persecuted people can also be found on these small monuments, which can be found all over the country.
I didn't know about those. I saw the memorial to the murdered Jews in Berlin the last time I was there, and as I walked farther and farther into it, I totally lost it. Wow, is that powerful.
Yeah. That's the Holocaust Museum?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. A place for contemplation indeed, yeah. Father Stephen Warren lives in Cameroon, and this is what he wrote. I think immediately of the unfortunately highly toxic Lake Nyos in the Menchum Valley of my beloved Bamenda Northwest region. On August the 21st, 1986, a major carbon dioxide eruption occurred that wiped out nearly the whole human and animal population and property of the entire village, as well as creating toxic effects way beyond the environs. Care you to know more and learn, quoting our darling Susan Owensby, Google Lake Nyos, Cameroon, or go to Wikipedia. Apart from the danger it poses, it would otherwise be the tourist place to be. But thank God, serious scientific efforts for degassing have since been put in place.
I had to live up to that challenge, Father Steve. Listen to this, everyone. It's fascinating, and I'm quoting Wikipedia. Nyos is a deep lake high on the flank of an inactive volcano in the Oku Volcanic Plain along the Cameroonian line of volcanic activity. A volcanic dam impounds the lake waters. A pocket of magma lies beneath the lake and leaks carbon dioxide, CO2, into the water, changing it into carbonic acid. Nyos is one of only three lakes known to be saturated with carbon dioxide in this way and therefore prone to limnic eruptions, the others being Lake Manun, also in Cameroon, and Lake Kivu in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda. Wow, who knew?
Nafisa Khatun is from West Bengal in India, a state known for its rich cultural heritage and bustling cities, but as she wrote, also hides several lesser-known gems that are waiting to be explored. Beyond the popular tourist destinations, these offbeat places offer a unique glimpse into the state's diverse landscapes and cultural tapestry. Travellers should not miss Bishnupur, which is located in the Bankura district. Bishnupur is renowned for its exquisite terracotta temples dating back to the 17th and 18th centuries. According to West Bengal Tourism, it prospered in the 17th and early 18th centuries under the rule of a line of Hindu Rajas of the Malar dynasty. Bishnupur developed a unique form of architecture and has perhaps the most brilliant and detailed terracotta work in eastern India that has withstood the ravages of time. Besides architecture, Bishnupur is also famous for its traditional Baluchari saris and classical music.
Okay, so Father Steve wasn't the only one to issue a challenge today. So did Nasir Muhammad.
Yes, yes, yes. He wrote about a series of gates in Katsina State, Nigeria. No need to name them as you are likely to pronounce them wrong. Lots of love, he wrote. Okay, I feel humbled. The gates were, as Nasir wrote, not only entrances, but were constructed in response to the city's need for security, economic regulation, social control, and symbolic representation of power and authority.
Okay, baby brother, are you up for the challenge?
I want it. I want it. Because that's the kind of guy I have become doing this show. They are the Gate of Marusa, which Nasir notes is considered one of the oldest gates built in the 15th century, the Gate of Yandaka, the Gate of Sauri, the Gate of Gug, the Gate of Durbi, the Gate of Kwaya, and the Gate of Kaura.
Okay, Nasir, howdy do. And remember, it's Ramadan and you're supposed to be charitable.
And no AI answers, please.
Exactly.
We'll end with Jayanta Chakrabarty, who wrote, "Though India has a storehouse of cultural and natural sites, I would choose the spectacular Valley of Flowers National Park that is unfortunately not typically visited by most tourists. At an altitude of 3,600 meters, this nature-made flower garden of 87 square kilometers is set against the stunning backdrop of the mighty Himalayas in the Indian state of Uttarakhand. It's said that the Valley of Flowers was accidentally discovered when three British mountaineers lost their way and chanced upon this valley. Attracted by the natural beauty, they named the place the Valley of the Flowers. During the monsoon season, nature blooms in full glory with some 600 species of exotic flowers and subalpine forests harbouring rare and endangered wildlife. Trekkers may come across cascading waterfalls and tranquil wilderness as they explore the unexplored." And there you have it. Remember everyone, this week's bonus question is, which is more important, talent or hard work? Do you have a bonus question idea? Well, if so, send it to us at The Sound Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, at rfi.fr.
That's it for today's Listener's Corner. Thanks, everyone, for participating. And a special thanks to Paul Myers for hanging out in the kitchen with us.
And getting those pronunciations kind of right. Thanks very much. A pleasure.
Susan Owensby, The Sound Kitchen, Radio France International.
Okay, my friends, it's time to clear the table and wash the dishes. Thanks for joining us in the Sound Kitchen, and keep those cards, letters, and emails coming. Many, many thanks to our sound engineer, Erwan Rome, for his input and his expertise in putting the show together. And thanks to you for listening. Be sure and tune in next week, March 22nd, for the answer to the question about Camille Claudel's sculptures. The Sound Kitchen podcast is ready for you every Saturday on the RFI English website, rfienglish.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'll play you out with music from Erwan, our sound engineer, who's also a musician. This week, Erwan chose music from Ethiopia, from the father of Ethiojazz, the composer, arranger, and musician Mulatu Astatke. Born in 1943 in Jimma, Ethiopia, Astatke originally studied aeronautical engineering in Wales, but changed course and pursued a formal musical education at Holy Trinity College in London, and then studied jazz at the Berklee College of Music in Boston in the U.S., and then, of course, as is usual, hit New York to hone his skills. A multi-instrumentalist, Mulatu Astatke plays the vibraphone and the conga drums, instruments that he introduced into Ethiopian popular music, as well as other percussion instruments, keyboards, and organs. Astatke combines Ethiopian music with Western jazz and rhythms, as well as Latin music. And there you have it. Thanks to Astatke, a new musical genre was born, Ethiojazz. Erwan chose Astatke's composition, Mulatu, from his 1972 album, Mulatu of Ethiopia. I hope you like it as much as I do. Ready to groove? Here it is. Mulatu by Mulatu Astatke, performed by the composer with his ensemble. Thanks for the musical journey, Erwan. I'm Susan Owensby. Be well, do good work, be kind, and stay in touch. And remember, do not confuse human beings, our brothers and sisters, with their governments, especially me. Stay safe, my friends, and be a blessing. Be a rainbow in someone's cloud. Talk to y'all next week. Thank you.